Time wasn't always money. The seemingly neutral ticking of our clocks masks a history of control and exploitation. When factory owners declared, "Time is money," they weren't stating a universal truth, but advancing a specific worldview that served their interests. The mechanical clock emerged not as an innocent technology, but as a tool for control, first organizing prayer schedules in monasteries, then coordinating labor in factories. Colonial powers imposed Western clock time worldwide, judging societies by how progressed their time systems appeared. Imagine the revealing exchange between a colonial commissioner demanding to know an Aboriginal man's numerical age while the man referenced natural markers, like no whiskers, two fundamentally different ways of understanding time colliding. Modern management techniques have disturbing origins in slave plantations, where owners meticulously tracked labor output. Thomas Jefferson calculated precise labor outputs in his memoranda, while plantation owners conducted time motion studies similar to those Frederick Winslow Taylor would later popularize. The concept of selling your time through wages is surprisingly recent. In early 19th century America, self-employed people outnumbered wage earners. After the Civil War, both white workers and black freed people compared wage labor to slavery. As miner Richard L. Davis noted, "None of us who toil for our daily bread are free." That guilt you feel when wasting time isn't accidental. America's veneration of busyness stems from Protestantism's sanctification of hard work, a moral framework that emerged alongside Europe's bourgeoisie, who viewed wealth accumulation as divine service and evidence of salvation. This ethic created fertile ground for factory management principles to invade personal lives. Psychologist Donald Laird's 1925 book, Increasing Personal Efficiency, urged readers to become their own time study man, avoiding excessive eye movements while reading and utilizing commute time productively. Laird distinguished between productive, active thought, business decisions, and wasteful, passive thought, daydreaming. Though approaches have evolved, modern time management still follows this self-surveillance model, tracking time, identifying peak productivity hours, and eliminating distractions. Today's productivity bros promise freedom through passive income that lets you screw the 9-to-5. The cruel irony? This freedom demands even more self-mastery, turning individuals into both manager and managed within their own minds. Despite the claim that everyone has the same 24 hours, time isn't equally distributed. The German word Zeitgeber, time giver, reveals how external factors determine our experience of time, whether it's children's schedules for parents, university quarters for professors, or app interfaces for gig workers. Women, especially BIPOC women, face additional pressures, expected to perform office housework while risking being labeled aggressive when asserting boundaries. Women-targeted time management books offer a lean-in approach, suggesting outsourcing disliked tasks while treating time as something to optimize. Though providing practical advice for privileged women, they avoid questioning why women still shoulder disproportionate burdens. The time tax affects marginalized communities through poorly designed bureaucracy, longer wait times, complex paperwork, and inflexible scheduling systems. Brittany Cooper's assertion that white people own time challenges the notion of unstealable hours, highlighting how race determines whose time is valued. For individuals, burnout represents the collapse of time management when obligations exceed available time, a phenomenon intensified by remote work's blurred boundaries. Even our free time isn't free anymore. Social media platforms exchange community for attention and data, as users consume experiences of slowness rather than actually reclaiming time. Researcher Hiroshi Ishida notes how Instagram users collect valuable experiences now due to future uncertainty. Historically, leisure has maintained a paradoxical relationship with work. The Protestant work ethic made non-work time economically relevant, incentivizing more work. Today, leisure functions as life coaching, exemplified by Larry Ellison's data-driven resort, where guests set goals and have metrics tracked. Social media transforms leisure into work, with users becoming their own ad agencies. Instagram creators describe exhausting content schedules dictated by algorithms. Even casual users experience the blurred boundary between individual and entrepreneur, making leisure an arena for eternal self-upgrade. At its worst, leisure becomes merely purchasing temporary freedom before returning to work. At its best, it creates a vertical crack in the horizontal scale of work, a pause where workers question their labor, process collective grief, and glimpse possibilities beyond the current system. The Anthropocene concept creates a hierarchy between humans and non-humans, portraying people as naturally exploitative of a separate environment. This contradicts indigenous perspectives, where land is our self. Paradoxically, this framing denies agency to both nature and humans, presenting history as a mechanical process without actors, just technologies causing inevitable effects. This determinism portrays history as an unavoidable progression that can only be accelerated or slowed, never redirected. Energy companies exploit this narrative, selling their version of an inevitable future while positioning us as passive participants. While collective grief matters, apocalyptic thinking constrains imagination. We need different ways of conceptualizing time beyond being strapped in all the way to the end. Communities already experiencing environmental degradation possess valuable testimonies and experiences that bear witness to the brutality of gradual environmental destruction. These perspectives vary widely. While the New York Times hypothetically asked about California's disappearing pleasant weather, farmworker Martha Fuentes had already observed temperature shifts during her 31 years in the fields. Communities develop time familex, shared temporal agreements like Filipino time among relatives or rituals between friends. These can conflict with dominant time structures, as when religions observe different Sabbath days. Colonial powers targeted both language and temporal practices to suppress indigenous cultures. The Xhosa broke a mission bell to silence European time control, while the Lakota disguised traditional dances as 4th of July celebrations. In the early 1980s, alienated office temps in San Francisco created Processed World magazine using stolen supplies. This irreverent publication blended Marxist analysis with satire, connecting isolated workers before the internet. Readers found comfort in discovering others who shared their workplace alienation. This horizontal communication remains essential today as work becomes increasingly fragmented. Workers use online forums to share information about exploitative algorithms, compare strategies, and build solidarity across geographical boundaries, forming alternative temporal communities that resist dominant time regimes. Sarah Hendren's concept of crip time challenges productivity culture by highlighting the tension between disabled people's temporality and industrialized schedules. For Hendren, whose son Graham has Down syndrome, this meant escaping lockstep culture. Graham lives with curiosity and joy, unburdened by milestones or comparisons. Disability activist Patty Byrne counters transhumanist ideals of constant excellence. While enhancement appeals when we're fatigued, Byrne sees perpetual excellence as lifeless. It's actually okay to be on a spectrum of reality. There are times when it's juicier, times when it's drier. It is being alive. Meaningful life extension reaches outward rather than forward, increasing aliveness for everyone through mutual regard. Time isn't something to master, but to co-create with others. Like Tifone rock formations shaped through salt weathering, our lives form through interactions with our surroundings. In our efficiency-obsessed world, our greatest rebellion might be recognizing that time isn't something we have or spend, it's something we create together. The future isn't predetermined, but a collaboration waiting to be written.